All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for logging into this national telebriefing hosted by the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, or NIRS. My name is Tim Judson. I'm the executive director at NIRS and the author of the report that we're releasing today, Killing the Competition, the Nuclear Power Agenda to Block Climate Action, Stop Renewable Energy, and Subsidize Old Reactors. And I'm very proud to be joined today by many of our great colleagues around the country who are confronting this agenda with us. With us today, we have Dr. Mark Cooper, a professor at the Vermont Law School at the Institute for Energy and the Environment, Tyson Slocum, the Energy Program Director for Public Citizen, Deb Katz, the Executive Director at Citizens Awareness Network, David Kraft, Executive Director at Nuclear Energy Information Service based in Chicago, and Jessica Azulay, the Program Director for the Alliance for a Green Economy in New York. And as I mentioned, we're here today to release a new report that NIRS has published called Killing the Competition. And this report really is intended to expose the agenda behind deceptive public relations campaign that a number of nuclear power companies initiated earlier this year, and which really is directed at blocking the potential for renewable energy and to utilize nuclear power as a primary source of energy in U.S. energy policy, and essentially as a way to be able to offset carbon emissions from these companies' own fossil fuel generation plants. And we want to begin with some background on this. Last year was sort of a record year in the U.S. nuclear energy industry, and really highlighted a sea change in the economics of nuclear power. Already, the vaunted nuclear renaissance that was begun about 10 years ago was beginning to fall apart, with almost three dozen new reactor projects that had been announced in the past. Most of them had been being canceled. Last year, there were eight of those projects canceled. But also, at the same time, what was really a shock to many in the energy industry was the closure of a record number of operating nuclear power plants. There were five reactor closures announced last year, and the first of those, the Kewaunee reactor in Wisconsin, came as in some ways the greatest shock to the energy industry and Wall Street analysts, because it was a reactor that was closed simply because it was uneconomical to operate anymore. And the energy industry and Wall Street analysts had for years thought that nuclear power was a safe bet, in terms of its economics, because ostensibly, it has low operating costs. But what the closure of some of these reactors brought to light, and Wall Street analysts began to really reevaluate, was the extremely high cost of maintaining and operating nuclear power plants because of their high capital expense. And this caused many Wall Street firms to begin to reevaluate nuclear power and predicting a number of nuclear power plant closures. And Dr. Cooper, who's going to be joining us in just a second, wrote a seminal paper outlining the fact that that there were potentially dozens of reactors that were at risk of closure in the U.S. So with the announcement of the closure of the Vermont Yankee reactor in August of 2013, we noticed a change in the industry's attitude, and we began seeing op-eds popping up in different places talking about how essential nuclear power was, how important it was going to be to the nation's climate policy. And this seemed odd to us, coming from industry players who actually had shown no interest in issues of global warming, and in fact were major generators of fossil fuel carbon dioxide emissions from their fossil fuel plants. And so we began to pay attention to this campaign, and earlier this year we saw an increasing use of front groups, PR, public relations front groups, by these industry players to begin to push out a message that nuclear power was going to be an essential part of the nation's energy picture in the decades to come, and that this potential accelerated retirement of nuclear plants because of their bad economics was going to be something that the U.S. needed to focus on and essentially rescue this industry from decline. In particular, a front group called Nuclear Matters popped up and is being funded solely, or at least at this point, solely by Exelon, which is the nation's largest nuclear power company. And they've hired a number of former White House officials and senators to act as spokespeople for this organization. Earlier this year, we put out a news release exposing the industry ties of this organization, which it had never been, but it had never clarified, and as well as the industry support of a number of other organizations, including the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions and an organization called Third Way, which were pushing out this same message that nuclear power was essential to preserve in order to prevent massive economic problems, rolling blackouts across the country, and to reduce carbon emissions. And we felt that at that point, especially with the release of the new Environmental Protection Agency regulations on carbon emissions, that it was going to be essential to really outline what the industry's agenda was, because we felt that this was really a deceptive campaign that was not about saving the climate, which was not essentially about making our electricity system more resilient and creating jobs, but really was about protecting the interests of this industry and essentially to slowing down our efforts to address climate change in this country. And so what we did was begin documenting the various fights that we knew that were going on across the country with these organizations, combating renewable energy policies and mapping out their agenda. And what we found was very disturbing, essentially the industry has mapped out a number of priorities that it has in order to save itself. And what they need to accomplish is several things. Number one, to reduce competition from lower-cost alternatives. And what the industry has decided is that their greatest long-term threat in this area is renewable energy, most notably at this point wind power and solar power, as well as energy efficiency, which they need to one of the other priorities that the industry has is to restore electricity demand growth in order to raise the price of electricity. They also want to create preferences for nuclear and coal power plants as what they call baseload generation sources, and to create ultimately new subsidies for these old nuclear power plants in order to enable them to meet their operating costs and restore their profitability. So essentially, in order to accomplish this, the industry has settled on a three-part strategy. First is to repeal or weaken renewable energy and efficiency programs. Second is to include subsidies for nuclear and carbon reduction programs. And lastly, to essentially change electricity market rules to guarantee higher prices for nuclear and coal power plants. And with this agenda in mind, they have essentially mapped out a path to restore not only the profitability of the nuclear industry, but also to enable coal and natural gas-fired power plants to escape the impact of carbon emissions regulations. And the way that we see this playing out is in a number of ways. First, and obviously at this point, is the EPA's new carbon emissions plan, which includes incentives for the preservation of existing reactors as well as the construction of new reactors, and as well as a number of initiatives across the country which are outlined in this report, and which my colleagues are going to discuss in greater detail. But they include attacks on renewable energy standards at the state level, attacks on solar net metering programs, and attacks on energy efficiency programs. Exelon itself is well known as one of the highest profile opponents of subsidies for the wind industry, and in fact was removed from the board and from the entire organization of the American Wind Energy Association in 2012 for how vociferously it has opposed the wind energy production tax credit. It has also announced this year that they intend to oppose the tax credits that benefit rooftop solar energy programs. So this is something that we see spinning out over the next few years, and with the advances that we see the industry having already made this year, for instance, with the cancellation of energy efficiency programs in Indiana, the suspension of energy efficiency and renewable energy programs in Ohio, that this that they are beginning to make progress on this, which we feel is important for the country to understand, you know, as Nuclear Matters continues this deceptive PR campaign, for people to understand the actual policies and implications that this has for climate emissions and for the transition to what we think is a lower cost, more sustainable energy system in this country. So with that, I want to open it up to my colleagues. Just a note for everyone on the call that we are going to hold questions until after the presentation, and at that point you can hit star 6 to raise your hand and you'll be called on in order, and we'll direct the question to the appropriate presenter. But with that, I want to introduce Dr. Mark Cooper, a professor at the Institute for Energy and the Environment at Vermont Law School, who, as I mentioned, has written a number of seminal reports on the economics of nuclear power and the transition to a sustainable energy system. So with that, Mark, would you like to take the mic?
Tim?
Yes.
I do not have Mark's correct telephone number to unmute him. Do you know what
that number is? Mark, if you could raise your hand, that'd be helpful. Just press star 6. And apologies to everyone for the technical difficulty. I guess while we wait for Mark, why don't we go ahead and have Deb Katz present. Deb is the Executive Director of the Citizens Awareness Network, one of the preeminent grassroots environmental organizations in the country, and which successfully led the seven-year campaign for the closure of the Vermont Yankee reactor last year. Deb?
Hi. With deregulation in the Northeast, nuclear corporations bought old nuclear reactors, anticipating the long-awaited return of the nuclear industry. Since merchant plants like Entergy and Exelon sell their power on the open market or through power contracts, but not through a rate base, it's not a utility. Therefore, with no rate base to return to when the corporation's expenses increase, the long-awaited nuclear renaissance proved to be an ill-fated public relations campaign. With growing investment in renewable energy, cost of solar dropping significantly, sagging energy use, and the low cost of natural gas, merchant plants like Vermont Yankee and others are losing a lot of money. In addition to escalating costs of operating aging machinery and depressed energy markets, Entergy also underestimated an active citizenry committed to a sustainable energy future in the Northeast. In August 2013, with tri-state opposition increasing, no long-term power contract, and escalating losses, Entergy announced the closure of Vermont Yankee at the end of 2014. With their profitability substantially cut and no rate base to return to, these nukes are in big trouble. It's estimated that 10% of the nuclear fleet will close in the next 10 years. As Tim said, with the closure of 5 nukes last year and the fear of an additional 10%, the industry wants to change the rules that would provide a life raft to a declining industry and create subsidies and special status to ensure their survival. This is unacceptable and will block the sustainable energy revolution that's taking place in America at this time. Thank you.
Okay, we have Marcus back on.
Okay, thank you, Deb. And next we'll be joined by Tyson Slocum, the Energy Program Director at Public Citizen.
Okay, hold on. Okay. Oh, sorry, my bad.
Tyson, are you on?
This is Tyson. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, great. So first of all, thanks to NIRS for the opportunity to talk today. As a representative of a national consumer advocacy group, we've been pretty outraged by some of the proposals being pushed by the nuclear industry. We have to remember that it was just a few years ago when some attorney generals and others were producing evidence that some nuclear power plants in deregulated markets were earning rates of return in excess of 100% in a year. So we didn't hear any complaints from the nuclear power industry when market rules were working fabulously well for their shareholders in delivering windfall profits. But now that market conditions have turned against the industry, and Deb laid out some of those reasons, because nuclear power has become a little more expensive to operate, that competing fuel sources have become cheaper, that energy use is flatlining or in decline, which works against nuclear power. Now these companies seek to change market rules at FERC and within the RTOs to guarantee that consumers pay above market prices to keep these units on. And that's outrageous. From a perspective of a consumer advocacy group, these nuclear power units are not needed for reliability purposes. That competing technologies, particularly with clean renewable fuels and with investments in energy efficiency, can more than make up for existing nuclear plants. And that's why we oppose all of these efforts, both within PJM and other RTO markets, and efforts underway at FERC to try and secure guaranteed out-of-market subsidy payments for nuclear power plants.
So thanks, everyone. I hear that Mark Hooper is going to be joining us just shortly. But thank you, Tyson, for that presentation. And we'll move on to Dave Kraft at the Nuclear Energy Information Service.
Thank you all, and good morning. I'm based in Chicago, Illinois, Nuclear Energy Information Service, a 33-year-old watchdog organization here. Since late 2013, the Exelon Corporation, which is based here, has led an industry-wide campaign designed to thwart the expansion of renewable energy and energy efficiency, secure financial bailouts for unprofitable existing nuclear reactors here in Illinois, and entrench the traditional utility model of central station generation coupled with archaic utility grids dominated by existing nuclear and fossil fuel utilities. What we've seen in Illinois since late last year on Exelon's behalf are the following. Originally, we saw not too veiled threats that Exelon may close up to 5 uncompetitive reactors in Illinois, which would result in the potential job loss of 2,300 workers, also occurring during an election year, if the legislature would not act to reward nuclear power's unique value to the state of Illinois.
Dave?
Yes.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Can you speak maybe a little bit louder?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes. Secondly, we saw the establishment and primary bankrolling of the Nuclear Matters Pro-Nuclear Front Group, which Tim already mentioned. In the legislative session, we witnessed meetings between the Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, which resulted in Speaker Madigan's not making a needed fix to the state's renewable portfolio standard law in exchange for Exelon's pledge not to close those 5 reactors that I mentioned previously for a 12-month period. And then finally, we saw the introduction of the pro-nuclear House Resolution 1146 the week after Speaker Madigan reneged on fixing the renewable portfolio standard. The introduction of 1146 by Speaker Madigan occurred after he met with representatives from Exelon and after the cancellation of the RPS fix. Its blatantly pro-nuclear mandate calls for 4 state agencies to conduct studies which are to conclude that closing nuclear plants in Illinois would be detrimental to the state's well-being, a conclusion reached without any data having yet been gathered, making this a study to show, not a study to know. H.R. 1146 also asks the U.S. EPA to order the state of Illinois to use nuclear plants to meet its pending carbon limits goal, and I quote, to offset and balance emissions from fossil fuel electric generation, unquote. This would guarantee the continued operation of polluting coal plants, which otherwise might have been closed. This is also in express contradiction to the stated purpose of the EPA's recently drafted carbon standards rule, which is, and I quote, to lower the carbon intensity of power generation in the United States. Lower carbon intensity means fewer emissions of CO2, unquote. To enlist nuclear plants to sell or trade credits to keep fossil fuel plants operating defeats the very purpose of the EPA's rule. Thus, through the provisions of 1146, Exelon intends to subvert the legitimate goals of the EPA carbon standard rules, using them as a fig leaf justification to keep its uncompetitive nuclear reactors operating and to ensure the continued operation of polluting coal plants as well, while destroying the expansion of renewable energy and energy efficiency in Illinois. For us, this is not sound climate energy or energy policy. It's political payback and business as usual, and we will be opposing that in Illinois. I'll be glad to provide a copy of this statement by email to anyone who requests it. Our email address is neis@neis.org. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. And now we've been joined by Dr. Mark Cooper of the Vermont Law School, and would like to hand over the mic to Mark.
Thanks a lot, Tim. I got stuck on mute, but we finally solved the problem. I'm a senior fellow at the Institute for Energy of Vermont Energy and Environment of Vermont Law School. And I basically want to talk about everything but nuclear power today, because the interesting thing is that nuclear power has never been economically competitive with alternatives throughout its history. But what is different today is the potential to transform the electricity system in the 21st century to one that is oriented around distributed resources, renewables, efficiency, and the intelligent management and aggressive management of supply and demand. In that environment, the large, inflexible, costly nuclear reactors will have no place. And the industry recognizes that. So this is not simply about the prospects for when can we get another plant built and online. This is about the fundamental nature of the electricity system. In that 21st system, nuclear reactors will simply have no place. And so they've launched this frontal assault on the alternative. Interestingly, in the last year, there have been more than a half a dozen independent analysts, Citi, Credit Suisse, Morningstar, McKinsey & Company, Motley Fool, Barclays, and most recently, UBS, all have looked at the potential for this new electricity system and concluded that efficiency, renewables, and system management will, in fact, render large central station facilities obsolete. The academics have been saying that for quite some time, but now the Wall Street analysts are saying it. That is what has motivated the industry, the nuclear industry, to attack the alternatives. They're using the cover of climate change policy to advance. But remember, all of the things I mentioned, efficiency, renewables, system management, demand response, are low carbon resources. So it really is a battle of the structure of the industry as we move forward to the 21st century and we meet the challenge of climate change. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mark. And before we introduce our last speaker, Jessica Azoulay, just want to let everyone know that once the presentations are concluded, you can raise your hand to ask questions by pressing *6 on your phone, and we'll call on you in order. So our last speaker is Jessica Azoulay, the Program Director for the Alliance for a Green Economy in New York. Jessica?
Thank you, Tim. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. So hello, everyone. I want to thank NEERS for holding this briefing and for putting out this report, which really does connect the dots for groups like ours and for journalists like all of you who've called in today. So thank you again. Alliance for a Green Economy is the primary watchdog organization in upstate New York, where we have three of the state's four nuclear power plants. And we're also a leader in the movement for sustainable energy in New York. So we know a lot about both nuclear power and solutions to climate change. Two of New York's reactors, Ginna, owned by Exelon, and Fitzpatrick, owned by Entergy, are on the economic brink that we've been talking about today. In a recent filing with the New York Public Service Commission, Exelon stated that Ginna had lost about $100 million over the last couple of years, and this was before an above-market contract with the local utility expired. Entergy has admitted that the Fitzpatrick reactor is troubled economically, and financial analysts have predicted the plant could be losing millions of dollars a year. It's important to note here that when there's financial strain at nuclear plants, the companies can try to find ways to make more money, as we've been talking about today, but they also pursue cutting costs at the plants to try to approach profitability. Already in New York, we've seen Entergy cut jobs and delay maintenance of key equipment, and this has very dangerous implications because nuclear plants should not be run on the cheap. So for safety reasons, we really can't afford to let them languish or limp along on the edge of profitability while they search for these market fixes that NIRS talks about in the report. The spin coming out of groups like Nuclear Matters is all about saving us from catastrophic climate change, but we really cannot forget the catastrophes the nuclear industry offers us in exchange. They want to lull us with their newfound concern for the environment, but we can't forget Chernobyl or Three Mile Island or Fukushima, or the mountains of nuclear waste with nowhere to go. I just want to say here, it's really important to remember the nuclear industry has no leg to stand on when it talks about preventing catastrophe or saving the environment. But in New York, we're making actual plans to cut electricity prices and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and these certainly don't include these false solutions posed by the nuclear companies. While they want us to double down on baseload generation, and I mean really double down, NIRS report calculates they want us to pay them more than 1.5 times the market price for electricity, New York is putting billions of dollars into solar energy and making plans to dramatically promote distributed energy resources for a more resilient, efficient, and democratic system that Mark was just talking about. Where I live in Syracuse, New York, people are hungry for these real solutions to climate change. On Tuesday, my organization held a workshop about solar energy, the 7th in 5 weeks, and it was standing room only. People are signing up in droves to see if they can go solar. Meanwhile, the New York Public Service Commission is in the middle of a major proceeding called Reforming the Energy Vision, which, if done right, will reduce demand on the wholesale generation market, reduce peak energy prices, and really push forward this distributed energy system. People are ready to make the switch, and they are pushing for policies that will accelerate the transition. Nevertheless, Exelon is going to the New York Public Service Commission with its handout. In July, the company filed a petition asking for above-market contract and saying that without one, they might close the plant. I can get into more details about how they're circumventing the process to look for alternatives. But the bottom line is that this contract that Exelon is seeking for Ginna would end up costing Rochester area ratepayers over $100 million a year. And for what? To prop up a plant that after 4 decades of operation can't turn a profit, and to delay the development of climate-saving alternatives. So the report released today by NIRS exposes the real motives behind this agenda. The industry is scared. They're fighting for their lives, and they will make any argument they can get away with to get a hold of our money. While we, real climate activists, are embracing and advancing a real sustainable energy future, the nuclear industry and their paid spokespeople are doing everything they can to drag us back into the years when they made huge profits on the backs of ratepayers and taxpayers. The NIRS report reminds us that no amount of fairy dust or slick PR or wishful thinking on the part of the nuclear companies or their front groups can hide the fact that they do not represent the public interest. They represent only themselves and their investors. So thanks again for the opportunity to speak to you today and to my colleagues around the country who are exposing and fighting this nuclear agenda, and again, especially to NIRS for this very informative report. Thank you.
Great, and thank you, Jessica. And thanks again to all the presenters for their comments. And We'll now open it up for questions. You know, you can just press star 6 on your phone to raise your hand, and we'll call on you in order. And to kick us off, you know, one of the other issues the Public Citizen is working on in this, you know, in taking on this agenda is supporting ratepayers and environmental advocates in the state of Ohio. And I wonder, Tyson, if you can talk about the proposal that First Energy has put forward in Ohio for its nuclear and coal plants.
Yeah. This is Tyson Sokin with Public Citizen. Our outreach director, Allison Fisher, was testifying in Ohio earlier this week, raising concerns about proposals being pushed by Duke and other utilities in Ohio to require fixed-price power purchase agreements that are significantly above market prices for a collection of coal and nuclear units in the state under the guise of the power purchase agreements are necessary for reliability purposes. And we have come out firmly against this proposal. You know, it's not a surprise that these companies would try and get above market payments for their units, but what the state needs to do is to do a request for proposals from all sorts of different generation sources, renewables, others, energy efficiency investments, and conduct a clear cost-benefit analysis as to what is going to be in the best interests of ratepayers. And we believe if that process is conducted, nuclear units and the coal units will be prohibitively expensive. And so once again, we see this issue coming up where these older nuclear units are uneconomic, are no longer adequately competitive with other generation sources or with energy efficiency investments, but yet they're trying to use their political and economic power to secure new subsidies for these units.
Great, thanks, Tyson. And again, just you know, press star 6 on your phone to raise your hand, and we'll take your question. Deb Katz, I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about the conditions that closed the Vermont Yankee reactor and what you're seeing happen in Vermont in the wake of that, you know, especially with the, you know, the supposed environmental and economic impact of plant closures.
Well, I think what Vermont is an example of both how we go forward and the struggle we're in at this moment, because Entergy, the owner and operator of Vermont Yankee, attempted to terrorize the state and the people in the tri-state community that without its plant operating, you know, we were going to have to burn our houses down to stay warm in winter. And in fact, when the reactor, the contract with the reactor ended, which this power purchase contract ended before the reactor announced its closure, the power from Vermont Yankee, which was about a third of the power for the state, was easily replaced. And it was replaced at 2 or 3 cents a kilowatt hour lower than what Vermont Yankee was offering. And it was replaced, a whole third of it was replaced with hydroelectric power. So there was really the potential, and there is, to transform energy policy in Vermont and even in New England. But what's happening at this point is that there's a war on renewables taking place, and it's very palpable. So that in Massachusetts, you're having obstruction of the increase in net metering to allow more solar to come online. There is all of this fear being created about, you know, how will firemen be able to get up on roofs if there's a fire when someone has solar on their roof, that wind turbines are an abomination. And of course, this is driven indirectly by the industry that is terrified that it's losing its foothold and control of the energy markets. And what's most dangerous in this is, because I believe that, in fact, solar will win out in this, but the danger is that companies like Google, Walmart, all of them will, in fact, use solar. And corporations will use solar because, of course, it's cheaper, but that raises the issue of energy equity, that, in fact, what may happen if this if nukes get their way and they get these special subsidies to continue to operate, and coal plants do as well, is that ordinary people who can't afford to put solar on their roofs, who can't afford to be part of this whole process, will in fact be stuck with dirty energy at higher energy prices. And this is unacceptable. This energy revolution that will come one way or another has to lift, as you say, all boats, not just the boats of those who can afford to put it on their roofs or their factories or their parking lots.
Great. Thanks, Deb. And I think we have a question now from Kari Leiterson at Midwest Energy News.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. In terms of the waste, is that debate, you know, I know there's been action on that front and debates about the temporary interim storage or whatever the term is and all that, but is that sort of playing out on a parallel track from these requests to for, say, the state legislature in Illinois to allow Exelon to benefit from the carbon rule? Like, is the waste figuring into these debates, or is that really happening separately and, you know, not being considered adequately by legislators or by the public? Or
sure. Thanks, Kari. That's a good question. It's a separate problem on a parallel track. You know, this is an industry that has multiple problems. The issue with the waste storage and the NRC's new regulation that it approved last week is really about their ability to license new reactors and to relicense old reactors. And, you know, this is really about streamlining a licensing process as much as anything. The economic issues with nuclear waste storage, the industry mostly has covered right now because they continue suing the U.S. government to get reimbursed for the cost of managing their waste. So, I think long-term this is an issue for them in terms of their ability to be able to license new reactors, since the waste problem is, you know, has still not been solved, and, you know, we're decades away from that being the case. But it's really, you know, a different issue in terms of, in terms of the issues that this agenda that we're talking about addresses. Now, what I would say is that in terms of the impact on climate, it's very relevant, because what we have now is a crisis in nuclear waste storage across the country at these reactor sites, where because they've continued to generate this waste, the fuel pools at these reactors are packed to the gills with this incredibly hot and radioactive irradiated fuel. And an accident at one of those sites could be devastating to not just to the local community, but to a whole region of the country, given the accident potential for one of these spent fuel pools. And that, you know, could lead to a situation like you've seen at Fukushima, where because now the country is currently relying on nuclear power as a major part of its energy strategy, an accident like that could cause a very rapid reevaluation of the energy source. And as we've seen in Japan, with the closure of all of the country's 54 nuclear reactors since Fukushima, it's completely derailed their climate policy in Japan. And now, because the current government has decided to try to restart these reactors, it's ignited an energy debate in Japan that is going to take years to resolve and is going to make it really impossible for them to get on a coherent track to reducing their carbon emissions. And we could be in the same boat in this country, if we don't, you know, really take an honest look at the potential for nuclear power and its economic problems. And an accident at one of these reactors, including an accident involving nuclear waste, could be something that really changes the game. And, you know, I think what we've seen is a very different approach in a country like Germany, where they've made a deliberate reassessment of the viability of nuclear power. They're phasing it out. They've invested a lot in renewable energy, and they're actually reducing energy prices and staying on track with their, you know, with their climate obligations at the same time. We could do the same here, and I think Dr. Cooper laid out exactly, you know, why that's the case.
Thanks.
So if there is there any other questions?
Tim, I think I just got unmuted. Let me bring the waste question into the economic realm.
Sure.
The nuclear industry is the beneficiary of two what I call existential subsidies: the socialization of waste and accident liability through the price management. Those costs have been thoroughly socialized. They don't set aside enough money to deal with it. In the long term, there will be a massive social cost that will be borne by the public. Without those, they would not exist. They have never been willing to bear those costs in the private sector. And they've made it clear the industry would shut down without those socializations. So whenever they complain about some other technology subsidy, which tend to be very small economic subsidies compared to the long history of subsidization of nuclear power, they basically totally misstated the argument. The subsidization of nuclear power, the subsidization of wind and solar, bear little impact on the fundamental choice of how you want to structure the industry. In exchange for eliminating subsidies, if we repealed Price Anderson, if we required the utilities to bear the cost of waste, this debate would be over. Nuclear power would not be in the room, and the other technologies would proceed forward very, very rapidly. As an economic question, Tim has raised the other environmental and public health questions. As an economic question, we need to get past the issue of subsidies and look at what it costs to run these reactors, run the alternatives, put the energy into the system, and it's quite clear that nuclear power sees that they will be obsolete if they cannot stop this transformation.
Thanks, Mark. That's a terrific point. I mean, then thank you for correcting me on that one. Okay, great. Well, it seems like that's the end of our questions. I want to thank everyone again for participating in this telebriefing. And if you have any questions, you can follow up with us at NEARS. And we'll be sending out our press release shortly, which you should receive, that also includes the contact information for all of the presenters if you have follow-up questions for them. So, again, thanks again to all of our presenters for their terrific comments. And thank you again for attending. Have a great day, everyone.